good afternoon or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Dark Reading Radio. Today's topic, when will passwords finally die? And this discussion is going to be a great one. It will be managed and brought to you by your host for today, Kelly Jackson Higgins. Before we turn things over to her, though, just want to remind everyone that in addition to the audio today, there is a live text chat going on here at Dark Reading. We'd love to have your voice in that chat, and our host and her guests will be joining that conversation at the bottom of the hour. Now, to take part, all you have to do is type your comment or question into the box labeled your post, and then be sure to click on that big red post button underneath the box. Well, with that, it's time to get on with our discussion. So, Kelly, we're going to turn things over to you.
Thank you, Kurt, and thank you, everybody, for joining us today. With me, I have two excellent panelists to talk about this topic that I know we've all been talking about for a lot of years. The first one is Brett McDowell, who is the Executive Director of the FIDO Alliance. And if you don't know already, FIDO stands for Fast Identity Online. We'll talk more about that group in our discussion, but I want to welcome Brett.
Thank you, Kelly.
And our second guest today is Corey Nachreiner, who is the Chief Technology Officer at WatchGuard Technologies. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It's always a pleasure to be part of Dark Reading Stuff.
So I want to put a little context around our discussion before we get started with some of the questions I had for you guys. So kind of as we all know, passwords regularly get guessed, hacked, stolen, abused in various ways. But they're still pretty much alive and well. There was a study recently by Risk-Based Security that looked at the 2015 reported data breach incidents worldwide. And half of those were incidents that exposed passwords and email addresses. So really, passwords are still a pretty big target for obvious reasons. So in some cases, they're sort of sitting ducks in an organization if they're not hashed or protected properly. And if they're weak ones, they're obviously crackable. So that's still an issue that we see here and there. But we do know there's some industry efforts underway to replace or augment them. We have multi-factor authentication, biometrics, password managers, and, of course, the FIDO Alliance. So it's not like we're not trying to improve the situation, but sometimes it feels like we're a little bit stuck on pause. We have organizations who use passwords as their primary method of authenticating users. And I personally cannot wait to never have to use a password again. So I'm eager to find out more about when I can get to that point. I have way too many to manage. So let's kind of, before we get into the specifics about some of the actual industry efforts, I want to sort of look at the landscape. And so, Brett, just starting with you, and then we'll go to Corey. Why do you think the passwords still so often get stolen or compromised? Is it the password that's the problem, or is it the storage of the credentials, or what's sort of the underlying issue here? Do you think that we're still seeing this issue?
Sure, Kelly. There are many reasons why we struggle with passwords as an industry like we do. And it could be summarized into vulnerabilities. The password is in authentication speak, it's a shared secret. That is a type of authentication credential that needs to be shared between the application you're logging into and the user themselves. So it's something that you need to know, you need to wield. In authentication theory, we tend to talk about factors of authentication. That falls into simple categories like what you know, what you have, like a security device, or what you are, like a biometric. And passwords are a shared secret, what you know authentication factor, and therefore they're vulnerable to social engineering, just tricking someone, like phishing attacks. Phishing attacks continue to be the primary vehicle for harvesting passwords, according to the Anti-Phishing Working Group. Data breach, if you go and successfully penetrate a network and grab a data dump of credentials, now you have all these passwords you can reuse. And because it is just so hard for a human to have a unique password with every application, they tend to be reused. So that means one data breach can lead to many other systems being compromised with account takeovers. So it's basically the password has inherent properties that make it highly vulnerable as an authentication credential.
That's a really good point. I mean, I don't know how many of us know people who, even in the business world, who do reuse passwords or at least parts of passwords, and they have trends in how they craft their passwords. And I know it's still a problem among a lot of consumers and family members, as we know. So, Corey, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think Brent covered a lot of great points, but I do think we should start just with the fact that, you know, authentication is the cornerstone of everything we do in information security. One of the big issues with passwords or however we authenticate is it's really kind of our most important protection. Whatever we're doing to protect our data, you know, network security controls, host-based security controls, access controls, whatever it is, they all depend on us authenticating the people we trust from the folks we don't. So why this is such a big topic is this is really the first target a bad guy will go after. If I'm a hacker and I can get your credential, whatever it is, I don't have to do it. I don't have to socially engineer you. I don't have to hack some vulnerability in your software. I can just be you. So passwords or authentication and credentials are super important. So what is the problem with passwords? Well, there's a lot of weaknesses, and I think Brett laid a lot out. I think one of the biggest weaknesses is the fact that because they are this shared secret, traditionally we've stored them in a central server. You know, a lot of our authentication mechanisms rely on us having our passwords on the actual authentication server in some way. So just creating a central repository of the actual credentials, you know, gives an attacker a one big juicy target to go after. And that's where, how do we store these passwords? I think we all know that, you know, storing passwords, we don't really store them as text. We hash them using the one-way algorithms that are, you know, we say they're not reversible. But the truth is there's a lot of magic to how you hash, in that if you're not doing it using the latest techniques, you can still make a one-way reversible function that's easy to brute force or easier. So, you know, when we first started storing passwords, a lot of web servers stored them as MD5 hashes with no salting, no additional thing that makes each separate credential slightly unique, which means that if a bad guy gets all these credentials that are supposedly not reversible, it's actually pretty easy for him to crack all those because he has rainbow tables of all the most common MD5 passwords. So storage is really important to passwords. But ultimately, I think what we're finding the issue with passwords is usability, right? I mean, if a security nerd in my white tower tells you all kinds of things you can do to make passwords stronger, you can, you know, the people that store them can do the right things to make sure that even if the database gets stolen, it's very hard for bad guys to actually turn those into workable passwords. And the users themselves would have to help by creating very long random passwords so that brute forcing just doesn't work well. Even if everyone did that, you know, that's just way too hard for the average human to do. So I think really the biggest issue against passwords and the biggest problem is really the usability of them. To keep them secure does take a number of steps that are hard for the average user. I will say you can't forget the benefit of passwords, and the reason we use them so long is they're the most easy, ubiquitous token to put in. You don't need anything. You don't need hardware. You don't need an additional token. You don't need a big public-private key infrastructure to manage certificates. It's just a word or a phrase you put in. So we keep them around because they're technically easy to implement as a very basic token of authentication, but they definitely have a lot of issues and baggage as well.
That's so true. And that kind of leads to the second thing I wanted to ask you guys about is, okay, so with that sort of backdrop, what about the two-factor or multi-factor authentication model? And we're seeing more of that, you know, through Google and other, you know, well-used sites trying to, including even Facebook and Twitter, offering that up not as a requirement but as an option. So I'm not sure how people outside the security industry are adopting it per se. But I'm curious how important multi-factor is to this issue. Brett, do you want to address that first?
Sure. This is why I think it was important for us to lay the foundation at the top of this conversation around the inherent properties that make passwords so vulnerable. Because one-time passcodes as a second factor, they're the same type of factor. They're a what you know authentication factor that if you're getting it from a unique device, then you can infer that it's also a what you have. But it is ultimately, at the end of the day, a shared secret. It expires usually within 30 seconds, so it does have, it mitigates several of those vulnerabilities that passwords have, but not all of them. You can still socially engineer it, you can still man-in-the-middle it, and therefore it has become almost as vulnerable as the original password. So what we really need to do is evolve as an industry to a totally different type of architecture that's not dependent on shared secrets.
What do you think, Corey? I know I've been trying to use two-factor as much as possible, and I feel a little bit better with Google Authenticator. I know it's not perfect, but it gives me a little bit of a feeling of security.
So I like multi-factor right now, and two-factor at the very least. It could have usability issues. You know, one of the previous historical issues with multi-factor is typically in the past it required hard tokens or extra stuff, which was just hard for my grandma in Kansas to do. But now with mobile phones, like the one-time passcode that Brent mentioned, it makes it, everyone has a phone. You can easily get a text or run a push app, you know, an app on your phone to do the Google Authenticator that you mentioned before. You can get at least an additional level of authentication. And really the reason I like multi-factor is I think security nerds can argue pros and cons to every type of authentication. I think we already know passwords ones. Brent started talking about the one-time factors that we send to mobile phones. We've already seen malware that infected Android devices to grab that second factor of authentication. So that is a weakness. We'll probably talk about other factors in the future, like in this show, like biometrics, but they have certain issues too. You know, they require hardware. Some companies, and I think we'll talk about what FIDO is doing, are helping make them more ubiquitous, but they're not perfect yet. We've seen Play-Doh and inkjet printers defeat biometrics. Technology will continue to improve so that their resolution and their way of identifying us as unique humans will get better and better. But just the fact that if some bad guy does ever get your fingerprint, you know, it's not like a certificate or a password that you can revoke or change. That fingerprint is now gone forever for your use for authentication. So there's weaknesses there. And even certificates, even using things like certificates to authenticate, we're seeing bad guys breach companies the same way they breach password databases and steal all the signing and private certificates of the organization and use them. The point I'm getting at is each of these separate authentication factors on their own, I believe smart hackers will find weaknesses with them, although there's pros and cons to ways all of them provide. But I think the benefit of multi-factor is when you put any two of them together, you exponentially increase your security. You make it that much harder for bad guys to get to. I mean, if you paired passwords with a biometric requirement at the same time, that's stronger. If you pair a biometric with a device certificate, that's stronger. Whatever the multiple things you put together are, they're just going to make the barrier to attackers much more difficult to get your credential. Now, of course, the secret sauce here is what is the user going to accept? We have to realize that with our strong best practices for passwords, they were just too hard for most users to use. So in that multi-factor authentication, we need to find ways to use multiple forms, multiple factors, without putting undue burden on users or requiring any specialized hardware. And that's what's going to take a little bit of time, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. Biometrics is one I think initially I thought, oh, that makes so much sense. That's an easy thing for users to be able to deploy. But we haven't seen a whole, you know, widespread use of it yet. Brett, I'd like to get your thoughts on the biometric element, like in terms of either a second factor or a primary factor.
Sure, absolutely. And let me just preface my comments by saying there's no silver bullet in authentication. The industry needs to continue to hold fast to the defense in-depth strategy for authentication going forward. But there is a sea change taking place, and that is to move away from shared secrets and away from scalable attacks, something that you can attack very cost-effectively if you're engaged in cybercrime, like phishing attacks, so phishable credentials. Things that you can attack remotely at scale. That is what is driving the cybercrime numbers and the fraud losses that we have and the identity theft that we have. If you can shift the game over to a directed attack where I actually need to go and get the device out of the hands of the user, you have completely changed the economic model for cybercrime. And even though it's not a silver bullet that's going to magically take all authentication attacks away, it's going to dramatically reduce the attack surface. And so at FIDO, that is the architecture that we've based on. So from the beginning, the first word in FIDO is fast because it's motivated by improving usability. We've seen as an industry very poor adoption rates when you just keep adding on extra friction for the user experience, like the one-time passcode as a second factor, unfortunately. Very low optional opt-in rates from users historically for that. I sometimes say the only thing worse than a password is two passwords, especially when the second one's about to expire in 30 seconds. It's a really hard user experience. So we wanted to make sure we had a great user experience. So something you touch, something you look at, or maybe speak to, that is about as easy as we can get. And so biometrics really open a lot of doors for us there. And then secondly, to have an architecture that's based on public key cryptography instead of shared secrets. So now the private key is on the device. That's the real credential. The only thing you put on the server is a public key. You don't put biometrics on the server in this architecture, so the biometrics are not vulnerable to the, you know, can never reset your finger paradigm, because you're actually just using that for device unlock, user verification to your local device. So between using biometrics for usability and providing presence of like a dedicated security token and public key cryptography as the architecture, which is not vulnerable to phishing, not vulnerable to social engineering, we think that we have a combination here that's going to result in a marketplace where you have to get physical possession of the device to attack, for example, a biometric. Maybe I can figure out a way to harvest a fingerprint and spoof that, create a prosthetic and spoof that, but I still have to steal your phone to do it. That's a game changer.
Probably a good time for you.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, before we go. Go ahead, Corey. Sorry.
I didn't know if I could add on to that, but I just wanted
Absolutely.
To say, I think one of the most important things Brett mentioned, which I really do like about what FIDO's trying to do, is take away that central repository. Because one of the weaknesses for biometrics could just as easily be, you know, if you are storing them in a centralized server, you're tokenizing them in some way, and hopefully you're trying to do something to prevent from replay attacks. But we've seen in the past where if someone can get to your biometric database, they may have all the keys to all your users' kingdom. So whatever the form of authentication is, the fact that FIDO's putting that on the desktop is very, very important. Now, it doesn't totally remove the you can't change your finger problem for individual users, but really a big issue with passwords is I bet you everyone's been using, not everyone, but grandmas have been using 123456 for their password for a long time. But it really wasn't a huge industry problem that was the case until the bad guys stole these big central repositories and then started realizing and reusing that password for a known credential. So just the fact that you're kind of limiting the authentication attack surface to individual devices means, as Brent pointed out, that it just makes it so much more expensive for attackers to, you know, they can't get 1 million credentials at once. They have to go individually.
So that's a really good point. It might be a good time, Brett, for you to kind of, for our readers who aren't familiar with FIDO Alliance, to talk a little bit about how you're achieving this model and concept in terms of the protocols and specifications that you're working on.
Sure, happy to. So we got together as an industry and started to say, even though it's an incredibly ambitious mission to try to replace passwords, someone someday has to do it. If you plot what's happened to us as an industry, or let's say over the past decade, you see a very disturbing trend line that doesn't end up anywhere good for anyone except cybercrime. So we set out on this audacious mission. We knew it had the open industry standards. That's the only way you're going to get the net effect. We knew that you would have to have support on every device you buy for this new architecture. We knew it couldn't be a shared secret architecture. We leveraged what has worked best for InfoSec for a long time, which is public key cryptography. And we came up with FIDO. It's basically the best we had available and leveraging the trends of biometrics. We launched FIDO in 2013. That's shortly after we started seeing fingerprint sensors being shipped routinely on smartphones. Since then, we've seen iris recognition. We knew that, again, there's no silver bullet, so the world isn't going to always be fingerprint on everything. So it's an abstraction layer in our standards. So you can use whatever user verification method works best, whatever users like, whatever turns up to be most spoof resistant, et cetera. And then between the user and the device, that's the where the kind of biometrics comes in. And then between the device and the server, we're using public key cryptography. So what happens is you register your device. Let's say you launch an app, like Bank of America's mobile banking app. This is using FIDO today for authentication if you're on a supported device with a fingerprint sensor. So when after you log in, it'll invite you. Do you want to register your fingerprint? And that's really up to the application how they want to communicate that to you. And then you say, sure. And so you've already probably enrolled your biometric with your device. So you're using that same enrollment, and it's very fast to register what is essentially under the hood, a FIDO key pair. So a public-private key pair. And the private key stays on the device, it never leaves the device, and is protected by all the new security features that are coming standard on smart devices, like trusted execution environments. So these things are protected from malware that might be resident on the device. The only thing the server gets is a public key. And the only thing they use that for is later when they send you a FIDO-compliant challenge, you present your user verification proof, whether it's your fingerprints or your iris. It could be a local PIN number if you really wanted to do that. And that then gives the FIDO client permission to sign the challenge with the correct private key. And that signed challenge goes back to the server. They have the public key so they can verify the signature. So it's strong authentication, multi-factor, both of what you are and of what you have, getting away from what you know, and it's just as simple as touching something, looking at something, or talking to something.
Where do we stand in terms of deployments? I know there's some products that are FIDO that are based that are support FIDO, but in terms of deployments out there, where does that stand?
Sure. We've had tremendous progress since we finished version one of our standards. So we just did that at the end of 2014. So we've seen essentially one full year where the market has known about these standards and could use them. And since then, we have over 100 million devices are out there that have FIDO certified authenticators on them. So the whole Samsung suite, actually the past two generations of the Samsung smart devices, tablets and phones, LG, Huawei, there are many OEMs that are shipping phones with FIDO support out of the box. And then in addition to that, there are a lot of specialized like security tokens. So we have something that is basically a better second factor. So you can very quickly start using some of these FIDO secure architectures in addition to the password systems you have. So we have something called U2F, Universal Second Factor, and these show up as dedicated security tokens that do the same FIDO crypto I just talked about, but you're just giving presence. So the first factor is your password, and the second factor is the presence of the security token. So we have over 100 different certified products in the market from over 50 different companies, and again, over 250 companies are actually part of this alliance growing this out, which includes some government agencies. So and it's very much global. This is not a North American phenomenon. It's a global phenomenon. For example, where we're seeing, I would say, the most adoption of this technology is in Japan and Korea. In Japan, NTT Docomo, which is the largest mobile network operator there, they have, at this point, 12 or more FIDO-certified or supported devices, including last week they announced the first iPhones. You can go and get your iPhone with FIDO support. Even though Apple isn't putting FIDO on the phones out of the box, NTT Docomo, as the mobile network operator, is adding that support for their identity-based services. So a lot of adoption. Some other key points would be Google. So all your Google accounts are enabled with FIDO second factor, U2F. Bank of America, as I mentioned, GitHub, Dropbox, NTT Docomo, Alipay in China, the leading payments provider there, is using Fido. So we're off to a strong start. PayPal, which is the company I was working for before I went full-time with Fido Alliance, and we were actually the first relying parties to deploy support for Fido for mobile payment.
What I was wondering also, that sounds like a lot of, sort of general consumer type adoptions. How is it going on the enterprise side? Is that still the area that's still in the works to be for adoption and deployment?
Thank you for that question, Kelly. The RSA Security Conference is kind of the main conference. I suppose I don't have to tell your listeners about the RSA Security Conference. And this year, RSA themselves announced their first FIDO-certified product offering via Access. So the same family of strong authentication products from RSA, which is a market leader in enterprise, is now FIDO compliant. They support those FIDO U2F security tokens in addition to the other form factors they've had before, like the one-time passcode devices and some new biometrics.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you. That's helpful to know. I know there's a question that comes up a lot with our readers. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here. We can definitely in the chat talk more about the FIDO stuff too, but we get asked by readers a lot about password management services. Of course, you've seen a few of them actually suffer data breaches of their own, exposing people's passwords and information and such. So I'm wondering what the two of you guys think about password managers. Corey, I'll start with you since I wanted to get your take on that first, and if Brett can pick up from there.
Sure. I think if you have to continue dealing with, I mean, a lot of people are dealing with legacy passwords, and they do want to improve their password practices by doing things like using long random passwords and different ones, at least at important places. It's really hard for a human to do. And today, password managers are kind of that stopgap solution that can kind of help with this situation, although I prefer just doing multi-token authentication. But they do have weaknesses, too. I mean, some of the weaknesses, again, it's kind of like how Brent said, you're limiting the weakness to one desktop, though, which is, you know, if a bad guy does hack my computer and is able to keylog my master password when I first log on to the manager, I have all my keys in that one basket, and they'll have access to all of that. Then, you know, one other benefit to password managers is, you know, our problem is, you know, I jump from a Windows PC to an iPad to a Surface to a Android device. I need to be able to use these strong passwords everywhere. And in order for password managers to support this ubiquity, they kind of have to attach their stuff to the cloud. So that means they do have to store your credentials someplace all your devices can get to it. Now, obviously, being a security company that's supposed to be guarding your passwords, one would hope that they're encrypting them, they're using their own public-private key cryptography to share that with you, they're encrypting the communication in transit when you're talking to devices. But we have seen password managers have vulnerabilities just like other software has had vulnerabilities. So they provide a risk as well. I do think ultimately for the average user, a password manager will help his password practices today while he has to use them. But ultimately, I would like to see more people being able to adopt multi-factor authentication, including, you know, biometrics as one of those factors.
What do you think, Brett, about password managers?
I suppose the theory goes if everyone involved in the system, from the user to the software developers to systems administrators, followed best practices all the time for password-based credential systems, the problem would be far less severe than it actually is. So I would encourage people to continue to promote education and best practices along the way, but most people are not going to follow those. They're not going to have a cipher in their mind that they can apply to every different website so that they can both remember their unique password and have a unique strong password with every different website. I know I could probably count the people who do that on one hand. So if you're going to fall into the trap of being, you know, kind of lazy, for lack of a better word, about how you manage your passwords, then you're probably better off using a password manager than, you know, sticky notes or reusing the same password everywhere. But whenever you put a stack of credentials together somewhere, you know, buyer beware, because you could get a breach not only if they're stored in the cloud and they're synchronized, but you could have a breach on your local device, you know, through a scalable malware attack. So best to follow those best practices and go see what folks like the National Cybersecurity Alliance are recommending in their Stop, Think, Connect educational campaign. But if you know you're going to fall short, you're probably helping yourself by using a password manager.
Those are really good points to think about. We've been debating that question for a long time, so I appreciate your take on that. I see that we're getting close to the bottom of the hour here, half hour, excuse me. But I have one more quick question for you before we drop to the online chat, and this can be a really short answer, and I know it's probably a little bit of a loaded question for both of you, but I'd love to know if you think we're ever going to get rid of passwords altogether. I think that's a gazillion-dollar question, but I guess we'll start with Corey. What do you think? Are we ever going to get rid of passwords altogether, or will they always kind of be out there?
I think it's possible, but it's far, far away. An easy thing today is how many operating systems, there's tons that are flirting with biometrics, but how many of them don't have a password in the background when the biometric doesn't work? Until standards, with the help of people like the FIDO Alliance, make these biometrics widespread enough that people can use them on every single device, and until the false positives are dropped enough that we can actually literally turn off the password because we don't need some sort of backdoor when things fail, I think it's going to be hard for us to get rid of them. But I think we all agree that passwords, among anything else, have a user, you know, difficulty problem, and we'd like to see them gone. But I do think it's going to take, you know, years and maybe a decade, not the next 2 years.
Bummer. Okay, Brett.
What you're going to see is when the operating systems support like FIDO standards and the FIDO approach to biometrics, you'll see that power users, like, for example, there was a time when, you know, there was a slice of the market that had smartphones. Not everyone had a smartphone. The early adopters had the smartphones. So you're going to see those early adopters are going to be using passwords far less frequently and pretty quickly. So for the majority of authentication that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, I would say in the next 2 years, you're going to start to be challenged for a password far less often. But I agree, it's going to be a decade plus before the password becomes the rotary phone. You know, there are still rotary phones out there, but they're kind of hard to find. And I think that's where passwords are going to be relegated in roughly a decade's time.
I'm going to have the visual of a rotary phone in my head forever.
Can I add additional color to that, Kelly? I really think the important part, I think Brent mentioned, it's the operating system will support them and most users will use it. But my worry is if passwords are still in the background, they're not really gone. And a kind of security-related analogy I can use is I think we all know that magnetic stripe credit cards are bad, easy to steal, easy to do fraud. There's these new chip and PIN things that are much more secure. But all the chip and PIN cards that U.S. is putting out still have that magnetic stripe. So even when 90% of people are using chip and PIN, if we still have the magnetic stripe on the card, we still have the possibility for fraud. So I think even if most Windows users are using biometrics to log on, if they have to set up a password in the background that they never use but is still there for the case when they might need it, there's still a password database somewhere, and we still left a little back door. So I think for passwords to be really dead, it's not just about users using the biometric as their default and only using passwords once every 100 times. The password has to be gone. Otherwise, it's still exposing its attack surface.
That's an interesting perspective, yeah.
So that's why defense in depth is important. There's no silver bullet, and account recovery flows are, going to continue to be a challenge for some period of time. But when you are no longer dependent on the password as the primary, challenge mechanism, suddenly you can put more friction around that because you are basically giving someone the last chance to get back into their account, and you can go ahead and put them through a more diligent account recovery flow if they don't have that initial, let's say, FIDO credential. So I do think it is going to get better. It's not just that there's a password there you can use. It's going to be harder to use any shared secret on its own once we have these better alternatives in the hands of the majority of users.
And I think we agree that would be the ideal, I think. I cannot wait for that day.
You and me both. I really appreciate Brett McDowell, Executive Director of FIDO Alliance, and Corey Knockreiner, CTO at WatchGuard. You guys, this was a really great discussion, and we're going to take this to the online chat. But before we do, I'm going to hand it back to Kurt, but I want to thank you guys and the audience for listening in today and for a great discussion.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. It was a pleasure. You too, Brent.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks to Kelly, thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for listening. Now it's time not to end our show, but to transition to that live online text discussion. Kelly, Corey, and Brett will be joining it in just a moment, and we'd love to have your voice in that conversation as well. Now, remember, to participate, all you have to do is write your text, your comment, your question into the box helpfully labeled your post, then be sure to click on that big red post button under the box. Be sure to check back with us here at Dark Reading for information on next month's episode of Dark Reading Radio. There will also be information on future episodes coming up very soon. If you're listening on a streaming or podcast version of this show, thank you so much. We're glad to have you, but do look at darkreading.com because we would love to have you in the live online discussions while these shows are happening live. Well, for everyone at Dark Reading, thanks for listening. We'll see you in that live online chat.